Jason splashed water over his face, then wiped himself as dry as he could with his sweaty shirt. It was past noon, and they weren't done yet. The water had receded nearly back to yesterday morning's levels, which gave him hope, but the men were tired and sore and out of sorts, and weren't moving as fast as they had the previous day. Still, he held out hope that they'd finish by mid-afternoon. He wanted to get across this creek today, by God. Wiping his brow on a bandana, Saul Cohen came up next to him and momentarily rested his shovel against a rock.
I didn't think it was supposed to be so hot this early in the season.
It's not. We just got lucky.
We're lucky with both heat and water. How many more?
How many more what?
Branches of this river.
None.
But other creeks, other rivers?
Yes.
With fords or ferries or bridges already there, one could hope. Just so it shouldn't be boring.
These treks rarely are, Saul. Boring is what you pray for.
Well, the good Lord didn't have his ear turned toward you on that one, Fury.
It was Mel Sanderson, one of Colorado Gooding's men.
Appears you didn't hear any of us.
I couldn't say, Sanderson. But so far we're alive, aren't we?
A sweaty Matt McDonald stepped up for his turn at the fresh water.
At least most of us are.
Back to work, man.
I don't believe that Jason feller likes you much, son.
The feeling's mutual.
Get up! By 4 o'clock, most of the wagons had successfully forded the creek and were setting up a new camp about 100 yards from the point of crossing. Jason was still busy at the ford, though, helping the remaining wagons across the stream, then climbing back up the muddy slope they had dug down to it. Last of all came the Wheeler's Iron Bottom wagon, which managed to sink into a creek bed that had held up under the previous wagons just fine. Jason had to run and borrow a couple of oxen from one of the other wagons to help pull it up. But he had got the job done, then brought the herd and Ramuda across. They were the easiest, although the hogs and goats were a little cranky about being asked to ford something that was deeper than they were tall. Everybody made it fine, though. By 5, the women were cooking dinner. Mel Sanderson had produced a harmonica and proved to be pretty darn good with it. Jason leaned back against the side of his wagon where Jenny and Megan sat on a blanket.
300 yards in a day? Pa would be plain embarrassed.
Papa would be proud, and you know it, Jason.
He thought 7 miles a day on the flat was bad.
That wasn't counting digging fords. How long do we get to Santa Fe?
A week, maybe, if we're lucky. We've got the Sangre de Cristo foothills to contend with.
Sanderson turned to playing a lively jig, and Colorado had pulled out a fiddle and was playing along with a great deal of enthusiasm, if not much talent. Several couples were dancing. Megan stood up and shyly held her hand toward Jason just as Abigail Crimp came up from the other side and grabbed his arm.
Let's dance, Jason!
Jason didn't have much choice. He followed her out to where the other pilgrims were dancing and joined in. When he turned back toward the wagon, Megan had disappeared. The trail, which had become frequently used enough to show ruts, split into a Y in the foothills. And about 6 feet from that very spot, Hamish McDonald and Jason were having a difference of opinion.
I say we go up, right over the mountain. We'll save time.
It'll take us over the foothills, all right, but it's tricky. We're bound to lose some wagons, maybe people. I won't chance it, Hamish.
Ah, you're loony, lad. Look how deep those ruts are. It looks to me as if more than half the travelers that have passed this way have taken that route.
We're taking the low road, Hamish. Around the foothills, not through them. You can do as you damn well please. I'm sick and tired of fighting with you. All right, everybody, follow me!
And then he just rode off and left Hamish sitting on his horse in their path. He didn't look back for quite some time, being content to ease along the trail followed by the wagons. But when he did glance up, he caught sight of something that made his stomach turn over. Hamish MacDonald's wagon, driven by Hamish himself, with Matthew up front on horseback. It didn't make him ill that Hamish wanted to chance killing himself, and it certainly didn't bother him that Matthew was up there. But Megan? Had Megan followed her father and taken the mountain trail? Was she in that wagon? Leaving Ward to lead the caravan, he galloped back to his own rig, only to find Jenny deep in conversation with Megan.
Megan, you didn't go with your father and brother.
They're crazy. I told them that if I couldn't stop them from killing themselves, I could at least save myself. They won't get killed, will they? I mean, not really.
They had a big fight over it, Jason.
You got to stop them, Jason. I know they're both bullheaded, but I mean, I was only trying.
Before Jason realized it, he had leapt from Cleo's back to the wagon seat and taken Megan into his arms. Jenny, sitting just beyond Megan, arched her brows, glancing heavenward.
Megan, it's too late. Megan, I didn't mean... What I meant to say was that it's too late for them to turn their rig around. They'd have to back the Conestoga down that narrow trail, and that's a lot more dangerous than just going on ahead. They'll be fine up there if they're careful.
Really?
Megan's eyes, cheeks, and nose were reddened with weeping and moist with tears, and for some reason, he couldn't help thinking that she'd never looked more beautiful. He couldn't help himself. He kissed her.
Jason!
Blinking rapidly, he pulled away. Megan's face was filled with questions, Jenny's with outright shock and surprise. He felt heat shoot up his neck and fill his cheeks. He scooted away to the very edge of the bench, then dropped down and off the wagon. It was a miracle he landed on his feet, he was shaking so hard. The big wheels rolled on by him. Megan's head appeared briefly, peeking around the edge of the canvas roof. And then somebody jerked her back. Undoubtedly, Jenny. He summoned Cleo, and the Palomino came trotting up. He remounted, wondering why just kissing a girl would have such an effect on him. But this was no Washington soil dove or Kansas City whore. This was the girl he was going to marry.
Marry? Where'd that come from?
Megan MacDonald, what do you mean by kissing my brother? I mean, right out here in front of God and everybody.
I didn't kiss him. He kissed me. He kissed me.
You sure stopped crying quick. Maybe you'd better fill me in with the rules of this sort of thing. I'm probably too young to understand, but I'll try.
Understand what?
Why is it all right for you to make eyes at my brother all the time and for you to kiss him right out where anybody can see you, but it's not all right for me to do the same with your brother? Don't you think I'm good enough for your precious Matthew?
Just the opposite, Jenny. I don't think he's good enough for you.
Oh, Jason! Jason!
Abigail Crimp waved her hanky at him from the driver's seat of Nordstrom's spare wagon, and, reluctantly, he made his way over. She was all dolled up today. Looked like she'd just walked out of a saloon, actually. In spangles and sparkly things and cheap jewelry.
Hello, Miss Abigail. What can I do for you this afternoon?
Oh, nothing. Nothing at all, Jason. Well, I just wanted to tell you what a fine dancer you are. In case I didn't tell you last night, I mean, because you really are a fine dancer, I mean.
Thank you. Well, I best get back up front.
Oh, no, don't go too soon. Did you know that we had such talented musicians in our very midst?
My pa said something about Colorado playing the fiddle.
Oh, I thought he was just grand, didn't you?
I really have to.
Jason, come quick!
Grateful for the excuse to turn his back on Abigail Crimp, Jason pushed Cleo from a walk directly into a lope and rode up to see what was agitating Ward. When they met, Ward looked as shook up as a bottle of overwarm sarsaparilla, ready to explode.
You got to come up front. There's been an accident. It's the Milchers. They busted a wheel all to smash.
I don't suppose they've got a spare.
You know, I didn't think to ask them.
Well, get up there and do it.
Yeah!
Ward galloped off, and Jason turned his attention to slowing up and halting the other wagons. He came to Salmon Kendall's rig.
Need a hand, Jason?
Thanks, Salmon. I'd appreciate it. Yep.
Salmon untied his saddle horse from the rear of his wagon, tightened its girth, and swung up into the saddle.
If they don't got a spare, I do. And so do the McDonald's and Saul. There's probably more, but I don't...
McDonald's spare wheel is probably halfway up the mountainside. But I'm glad to know that you and Saul both have one. I thought an extra wagon wheel was on Pa's necessities list for each wagon, right along with a rifle and water.
It was, Jason, it was.
As it turned out, an extra wagon wheel was one of the frills the Reverend Milcher had thrown out so he could fit his new piano in the wagon. And Saul Cohen had the misfortune of being in the wagon right in front of the Milchers, and thus was deprived of his spare. Jason and Saul watched Milcher, Salmon, Colorado, and Milt Billings lever Milcher's wagon up onto a makeshift support consisting of Mrs. Milcher's marble-top dresser. Milcher had done a job on his wheel, all right. If he had tried to find the biggest, most jagged boulder to run over, he couldn't have done a better job. Jason had Ward slapping whitewash on the offending rock to mark it for the following wagons.
Sorry, Saul.
It's good to help the man who hates you. He might come in handy later on. At least that's what my Uncle Nathan used to say. And didn't he die the wealthiest Jew in New Jersey?
Guess I never thought about it that way. But you're right.
The humiliation of it was written all over Milcher's face. It must be eating him up inside to think that he and his kin were going to make it only because a heathen Hebrew had done him a favor. Just then, the wagon was dropped on its support.
All right, let's get this wheel off.
Sure wish that Seth Wheeler was still with us. At least he knew something about being a wheelwright.
I haven't had the chance to see Mary since the attack. How is she holding up?
Fine, I suppose. Well, as good as anybody else under the circumstances. She was a big help to Dr. Morelli. She was a nurse during the war, you know.
And, I'm told, a dance hall girl before that.
Where'd you hear that?
Rachel. These women, they gossip. Well, they gossip. And my Rachel, she keeps her ears open. Anything you want to know about the private affairs of anyone we have ever lived near or known or almost known in the past 9 years, you bring yourself to Saul Cohen and ask. I'll ask Rachel for you.
The men had Milcher's old wheel pulled off. Well, it wasn't really a wheel anymore. It was just splintered wood and a bent, broken, rusty rim, which they tossed to the side in pieces. They got the new wheel in place and levered the wagon back down, although Jason thought that the sawhorse, Mrs. Milcher's bureau, was forever going to be the worse for wear. And they started moving again. By this time, it was nearly 5, and Jason figured they could travel for perhaps another hour before they stopped for the night. Which they did, at a wide spot on the trail that Jason had remembered. Other wagon trains had used it too, for there were a couple of graves marked by crude crosses near the edge of the place, and someone had left behind an old rocking chair. Saul's eye landed on it right away, and after giving it a kick to ward off snakes, he scooped it up, vowing to repair it later. There was still no sign of the errant McDonald's, but Jason didn't expect it. Either they'd meet up later in Santa Fe, or Hamish would get himself killed, regardless of anything Jason had said to Megan. He felt oddly embarrassed by that kiss. If he'd been thinking, if he'd been in his right mind or she hadn't looked so vulnerable, he would have restrained himself, both from the action itself and the self-recriminations that followed. But he hadn't been, and she had, and he didn't, and it was done. Dinner that night was a hodgepodge of game and tame animals, canned vegetables, and beans, and more beans. Everybody would be glad when they got to Santa Fe and could restock their mobile pantries. Once again, the harmonica and fiddle came out for some music, or at least something vaguely akin to music. As for Jason himself, He was keeping to the shadows, huddled in conversation with Saul or Salmon on the opposite side of the circled wagons from his own wagon and Megan MacDonald. He hadn't spoken to her since making that grave error earlier in the day. At least, that was how he thought of their kiss now, his grave error. They could have absolutely no future together. Hers lay with her father and brother in California, his lay on the opposite side of the country. She should marry some other erstwhile pioneer, not him. No, not him. Still, he couldn't help feeling drawn to her like iron fillings to a magnet. How could he feel she was so right, that she was the one, when she was so obviously wrong for him? His head was in danger of losing out to his heart, and he knew it.
More coffee?
What?
Nothing. I just asked if you need more coffee.
No, thanks.
We keep eating beans like this, and Rachel, for once, will be glad to be sleeping in an open wagon. It's a girl, isn't it? The reason you're acting so strangely, that is. For a minute, I thought maybe you were mad at me for volunteering my spare wheel. But now I'm thinking that maybe you've got woman trouble. Why else would you hide over here with a couple of old married people?
Don't be silly. Unless you want to get rid of me?
No, no. Sit. Make yourself comfortable. And tell me, who is she, this girl who has you tied in such knots? Is it the lovely Miss Crimp? I take it this is a no?
You take it right.
Ah, Megan MacDonald, then.
How?
Didn't I know it? Rachel, we were right.
Keep your voice down. Sorry, Saul.
No apologies needed. I remember what it was like with my Rachel. And I wasn't trying to keep 20-some wagons safe on the way west. You have quite a lot to handle, Jason.
I can't. Not right now.
You can't fall in love now? Love isn't something you can give yourself permission for. You can't pick the time and place or the girl. Love is God's gift to you and a woman forever and always.
Well, he sure picked a bad time to give it to me.
The young, so ungrateful.
Jason!
Over here, Jenny.
Jason Fury, have you been over here all the evening? I've been looking for you. Megan's been looking for you. Good evening, Mr. Cohen.
Good evening, Jenny. Please don't let me stop your conversation. I'm not here.
Megan?
Well, no, not actually. But if I were her, I would have dogged you all over camp.
You did.
Oh. Well, can we go somewhere and talk?
No. Just tell her I'm sorry if I embarrassed her.
Embarrassed her?
Jen, it's none of your business. Now, go back to the wagon.
None of my business? It's none of my business when my own brother...
I said go back to the wagon. Now, Jenny. I mean it.
Coward.
Sorry.
Women.
Exactly. Women.
Whatever it is, you'd better fix it tonight. Be a mensch.
A mensch?
Be a man, Jason. A human being.
Be a mensch, he told himself as he rose and walked, like he was heading for the gallows, to his wagon. Megan was nowhere in sight, but he couldn't think where else she would be staying other than with Jenny, what with her pa and brother having taken the upper trail. Hell, half the time she spent the night with Jenny anyway. Jason had been sleeping under Salmon Kendall's wagon. He reached the Conestoga and stood there for a moment, wondering what to do next, other than turn tail and hoof it back to the East Coast, which was his first thought.
Welcome home.
Jenny hung out of the back of the wagon, off the tailgate, and her face was as stern as her voice. For a moment, she wasn't his little sister at all. She was his mother.
You were right. Where's Megan?
I wouldn't wish to be in his boots tonight for all the cream cheese in... Where do they make cream cheese, Rachel?
Where they have many milk cows. Saul, don't you think you're taking too much on yourself?
Because I'm curious about cream cheese? I would like some right now. From New York City, where there are no Indians.
Why are you talking crazy all of a sudden?
Is it so crazy to wonder about a boy wooing a girl when it's possible that he's let her family stray into the hands of the heathen horde?
You're talking of the MacDonalds.
Who else?
And the Comanche. We haven't seen them for weeks. Why should we see them now?
Perhaps we are too many. Perhaps young Quanah Parker spares us for some reason known only to himself and God. Who's to know? But out there, one wagon, alone...
You shouldn't even mention it, Saul.
Why not? You think from my lips to God's ears?
You don't think it's bad luck to joke about such things?
All right, Rachel. Don't be worrying your head.
Saul?
What, my love?
Saul, I am in a family way again.
How soon?
7 months, perhaps 7 and a half. We will be settled in our new home by then. I am hoping for a girl this time. A girl is all right.
Megan couldn't believe what she was hearing. It didn't make any sense. It was all she could do not to burst into tears, but she hung on. Hung on because it seemed to confuse Jason so much when she cried. At least, that was what he was blaming for kissing her this afternoon. Blame? How could such a wonderful thing, such a perfect and sublime thing, need somewhere to lay blame? He hadn't touched her, not with the tiniest tip of his finger. He'd purposely stayed at the opposite end of the wagon from her. There was only one lamp lit, and she could barely make any of him out except for a glimmer of his profile. It danced with his every movement.
Do you understand, Megan?
No, I don't understand, Jason. Explain again how your kissing me affects some college back east.
Once again, he bumbled into a long, convoluted explanation that made no sense whatsoever. But she understood that she was listening to a young man desperately trying to talk himself out of loving her. Without much success, it seemed.
You love me, Jason. And I love you, too.
Far away on the upper trail, Hamish McDonald poured himself another cup of coffee.
And Megan said we couldn't feed ourselves without her.
She was just about right, too.
Well, I'll grant you, I've had better jackrabbit on this journey.
Didn't help that it fell in the fire.
But not all that much superior.
Also didn't help that you didn't notice it for a good 15 minutes. Or me either.
Well, that's right, by God. You didn't notice it either, laddie.
No, Pa.
That's more like it.
When you think we'll make it to Santa Fe?
Your guess is as good as mine.
Hamish pulled a cigar out of his pocket, lighting and puffing at it. Why did he have to smoke that smelly tobacco? Lord knows he could afford better. Judging from the fumes, it had to taste awful, like a mouthful of pig swill, Matt imagined. But if it was the cheapest possible but looked good, his paw would buy it. That was how his paw did everything. Shit on the inside, gold foil on the outside. Except for those Morgan mares of his, they were bred to the nines, each and every one. Matt had nearly wet himself when he learned what his father had paid for just one mare. Funny, him leaving them behind with the herd and the main wagon train when he was so sure he had found a superior route. Superior route? Hell, Hamish and that damn wagon had nearly fallen down the mountain at least 3 times today. Once, Matt had to hitch his saddle horse to the front end of the team to help get the Conestoga back up on the trail. It was the last thing that Matt wanted to admit, but he wished his father had listened to Jason Fury this time. The trail was terrible, narrow and rocky and rutted, and they had several times seen the traces of scraped earth left by some long-ago ill-fated wagon that had tumbled over the edge, dislodging rock as it went. If it weren't for his father's wishes, and the fact that he knew it would tick Jason Fury off, he'd be down below, taking the easier trail with the rest of the party. And to tell the truth, he had come more to irritate Jason than to please his father. Too bad that Jenny had to be a Fury, Matt thought. She was a little young, but she was sure a looker. If you liked the wholesome type, which Matt usually didn't. But he figured he could make an exception for Jenny Fury. Sooner or later, that stuck-up, pig-headed brother of hers would head back east to go to some fancy college, and Matt figured that by the time that happened, Jenny would be more than willing to stay behind, with him, and as a MacDonald.
What are you thinking about? You look like the cat who swallowed the canary bird.
Nothing. Just thinking, that's all.
Well, don't look so damn smug.
Smug indeed. He ought to be smug. Pretty soon he'd be in California, set with a wife, rid of Jason Fury, and first in line to inherit enough good cattle and horses to make him a big man no matter where they settled. That is, if his father didn't get them both killed on this mountain trail. Olympia Morelli, mere days away from giving birth, had just climbed down from the wagon to stretch her legs. She saw it first. Dr. Morelli saw where she was looking.
No! Whoa! Whoa!
He immediately hauled back hard on the team's reins.
Look out! Look out!
Morelli leapt down to see Olympia. She stood about 20 feet away from the wagon, hands over her mouth. Other women took up the cry as Conestogas hastily pulled out of line to avoid the hail of wagon parts and tumbling livestock and broken furniture and stray rock that came down the mountainside like so much confetti thrown by a careless giant. The scraped and twisted corpse of Hamish MacDonald rolled and bumped to a halt against the off-lead horse of Salmon Kendall's wagon.
Whoa! Easy!
Dodging flying chunks of wagon, Morelli left his wife and ran to the body. There was nothing that could be done. Hamish's face was pulp. He no longer breathed.
Look out!
Salmon Kendall grabbed him by the arm and yanked an instant before part of a wheel landed on the corpse.
Thank you, Salmon!
Salmon pulled him farther toward the back of the wagon, around it, and then off the trail. Olympia was still there, although she wasn't standing any longer. She was on the ground. He ran toward her.
Olympia!
I'm sorry, Michael. My water broke.
Come on.
As the last of the debris thudded and skittered down upon them, he helped her to her feet and to their wagon, where their children waited, huddled and afraid.
Pa!
Matt peered down the mountainside. Everything that was his and Megan's in this world, including their father, was gone. To him, the wagon had simply disappeared after its outside wheels slipped off the trail. Roughly, he wiped at his face, but he was still shaking from the shock, his burning eyes still brimming from the loss. He swung down off his horse, but his legs didn't hold him up. He sat down on the trail, just where his boots landed, and began to sob.
It's that damn Jason Fury's fault!
Below, the wagons had finally pulled clear of the section of trail where the remains of Hamish MacDonald's wagon rested. A grave had been quickly, if not easily, dug, and Hamish himself had been buried and spoken over in the grave marked by a crude cross. His dead and battered draft animals had been covered over with kerosene and brush and set alight. And weeping Megan, aided by Jenny and a few of the women, had picked up the precious few items not ruined and stowed them in the Fury's wagon. But Hamish's belongings weren't the only ones to suffer. Carrie English's wagon had been plowed into by the front half of Hamish's Conestoga, crushing her front wheel. Fortunately, she was carrying a spare. One of Hamish's dead horses had slammed into the Milchers' team and broken the leg of the off-wheel horse, necessitating its being shot. Assorted wagon debris had landed on Randall Nordstrom's second wagon and broken two of the wooden hoops that held the canvas up. Nordstrom had tried to figure how to fix them for the longest time, then given up and just strapped the canvas down over the load. And Jason kicked himself. Why had he dared Hamish to go up there in the first place? He should have just knocked him out and thrown him in his own wagon, then let Megan drive it. By the time Hamish came around again, they would have been well enough along that he wouldn't have turned back. everybody would be safe and sound, and they wouldn't be stopped again here in this clearing, trying to put themselves back together, while Hamish's horses sent up pillars of blackish smoke in the distance, and Mr. Morelli delivered his baby, and the Widow English nursed a broken arm. And where the heck was Matt McDonald? Not that Jason really cared. He supposed Matt was still up there someplace, alone. And for a moment, he did care about Matt. He knew what it was like to lose your father. You wouldn't want to be alone at such a time as this.
Jason?
Yes, Jenny.
The Morellis, they've had a little boy. His name is Rubio. Mrs. Wheeler helped midwife.
Congratulations to the Morellis, then. How's Megan doing?
She'll be all right. She usually is, though I don't know about a time like this.
Jenny, I've been thinking. Papa had a good friend in Santa Fe, Wash Keough. Been thinking that maybe I ought to leave you there till I can come back for you.
What?
I said I've been thinking
that... Oh, I heard you, Jason Fury. You will not drop me off along the trail. You hear me?
But I thought you might be happier if...
Since when is anybody concerned about my happiness? I won't stay, I tell you. I'll grab the first horse I see and take out after you.
Well, can't have you hanged for a horse thief. Guess I'll have to take you all the way with me then, just to keep you out of prison.
You promise? You know, they hang horse thieves.
I know. And I promise, Jenny, you won't hang.
Night fell. Matt McDonald crouched in front of his fire, alone, missing his father's company. No, not really. Not missing his company, just regretful. And put out. Yes, put out. It was all so damned inconvenient. Well, he did feel a little sad about his father, but was it only because he was supposed to? Was it just because he was used to him? After all, Hamish was the only father he'd ever known. He was the only grown man he'd known all his life. He supposed he should feel sorrow, but mostly he felt put upon for having to ride up this damn mountain in the first place and for having to watch all his belongings tumble down all to hell. Also, for the knowledge that he was going to have to navigate this lousy excuse for a trail all the way to Santa Fe, and all by himself. And for the fact that he had no dinner. He hadn't seen hide nor hair of a bird, let alone a jackrabbit, all damn afternoon. All he had along was some hardtack, in bits in the bottom of his saddlebags, and he'd eaten the last crumbs by about 4 o'clock. He was thinking very fondly of beans and beef. He'd just have to do without. Tomorrow he could find something to shoot and eat. He wondered if the train had come across what remained of his father in the rig. He wondered if it had even rolled and fallen that far, or if it had crashed behind them. Nothing could have survived that fall. Not a horse, not his father, not the wagon, nothing. Stomach growling, he lay down in the middle of that rutted trail and tried to sleep. Several days later, when Jason and the wagons pulled into the dusty town of Santa Fe, Matt was waiting for them. He waited until he saw Jason dismount. Then he walked out into the open, right up to him, and tapped him on the shoulder. Having rehearsed this scene in his mind over and over, Matt had expected Jason to go down when he punched him, maybe even fly back a couple of feet. But he didn't go down. The blow to his stomach sent Matt back, doubled over and staggering and waiting for Jason to strike again, but he didn't. He just stood there, glowering and rubbing his face.
What's your problem, McDonald?
Men from the other wagons were running up by this time. Saul Cohen and Salmon Kendall pinned Matt to the ground.
You idiot!
Let go! I'm gonna kill you, Jason Fury!
He heard, more than felt, somebody slipped the revolvers from his holsters, and then arms yanked him to his feet.
Señores, is there a problem?
The voice belonged to a big Mexican, complete with badge.
Must I repeat myself?
There's no problem.
No problem at all.
The deputy stood there a moment longer, and then he walked on. When he passed out of sight, Kendall and Cohen released Matt.
My pa's dead 'cause of you. That's something I won't ever forget. Ever. You get me?
Don't suppose you will. Even if it's not true.
Now, Matthew, your papa made his own decision. Didn't we all hear him, Salmon?
I sure did. Heard him plain.
Just be thankful you were with him. He might not have lasted so long as he did.
You'll pay for this, Fury. Sooner or later, you'll pay and I'll be there, taking the toll.
After getting the last wagon in place and seeing that each family was settled in, Jason set out to see the dusty little town of Santa Fe and look up his father's old friend, Wash Kehoe. Saul tagged along with a shopping list from Rachel tucked into his pocket. Santa Fe was a wonderland to Saul. Most of the buildings were made of a clay mud, which, Jason informed him, was called adobe, which was whitewashed to glimmer in the sun. Some buildings were plainly Spanish in their architecture, and others were, well, American. Plain, a little dirty looking. Saul was shocked at the dead animals left to rot in the streets, though Jason seemed to pay them no mind. He was aghast when they passed a cantina that looked to be a brothel, too.
This is some strange place.
They passed a beautiful señorita, dressed all in black and followed by an older woman and two men carrying guns.
That's Miss Constanza Cordoba with her companion and her bodyguards. Rich. Really old world Spanish, if you know what I mean.
Saul didn't, but he nodded his head anyway. He was too busy taking everything in to be distracted by explanations. At last, Jason turned into the front walk of a small white house, adobe in construction, and rapped on the turquoise-painted chipped front door. Red, dried, and hard fruits of some kind hung on it in a huge bunch.
That's called a chile ristra.
The door opened, and a smallish, gray-haired man with his hair and a long horsetail, nearly to his waist, a face like an axe blade, a big grizzled mustache, and a little pot belly under his long pink underwear stood there.
Jason? Jason Fury?
Howdy, Wash. How goes it?
Oh, fine. Well, come in. What you doing standing on a man's front stoop all the day?
Saul followed Jason in, although he had yet to be introduced. However, Mr. Kehoe didn't seem too inclined toward the formalities, so Saul decided he needn't be either. He waited until Kehoe led them to the kitchen and put on the coffee pot before he stuck out his hand.
Saul Cohen, sir. It's an honor to make your acquaintance.
Well, I'm sorry there, Mr. Cohen. I'm right pleased to meet you. Any friend of Jason's is a friend of mine. Where's your pa anyhow, Jason? That old mule Skinner owes me a game of checkers.
Saul tried not to listen while Jason told Kehoe about his father's death. The words of it washed over him, but he heard the thickness in Jason's voice and the sorrow in the voices of both men. He fervently hoped that no one would cry, then said a quick prayer for forgiveness. He shouldn't be worried about being embarrassed at a time like this. But no one cried, thank God. In fact, no one so much as spoke a word once the news had been passed on. Kehoe poured out the coffee, or at least what passed for it, then joined them at the crude table.
Well, that's tough. That's mighty tough for you, Jason. But it had to happen sooner or later. A man pushes his luck with redskins too much, he's bound to get arrow shot sooner or later. You damn lucky they didn't take off with all your woman folk, too.
Jason then launched into the story of trailing Quanah Parker and the subsequent dice game for the girls and the livestock.
Oh, Jason, you say Saul here thought of making the dice?
Yes, that's me.
By God, Saul, that was some kind of quick thinking. Jedediah would have been proud of the both of you. So, where are you headed this time, Jason? California? Arizona? Maybe up Denver way?
As it turned out, it didn't much matter to Wash Kehoe where their destination was. He was passing 50, had not 1 cent to his name, and he was ready for a new start. Jason figured it was about the 15th new start Wash had undertaken. Jason was happy for him to tag along. Hell, he was delighted to hire him and pay him $30 and found. Wash was as close a thing to a mountain man as they were likely to run across, and he traversed the trail west more than most. Probably about as many times as Jedediah had, if not more. But there was one thing. Wash had to test out the grub before he made his final decision. They all three walked back through town to the place where Jason had left the wagons.
Be proud for you to test out the grub. We got a mess of really good cooks. You'll be surprised.
I hope so, Jason.
Aye, Rachel's list.
Better take care of that, Saul. She'll have your guts for garters otherwise.
I assure you, Mr. Keogh, the ramifications would not be so terrible. But almost.
Saul ducked into the nearest mercantile.
I hope we don't forget sugar cubes in case we run into some like-minded Apaches.
Good thinking.
They had walked to the southernmost part of town where the wagons waited before either of them spoke again.
Whew! Got a sizable herd there, boy.
It's smaller when everybody's hitched up.
Well, of course it is. You take me for an idiot? Say, what's that I smell? Is that fried taters and onions? Is that beef? Oh, I ain't had beef in a coon's age, let alone woman cooking.
You'll have both tonight, Wash. While we're waiting, let me introduce you around.
Just don't go expecting me to remember half the folks I shake hands with. Never was good with names, and I find I'm getting worse in my old age.
Jason introduced him to nearly everyone in the caravan and spent the time walking between wagons to give him a quick rundown on everyone he'd just met. After they left Abigail Crimp's wagon, Wash looked at Jason.
That gal's mighty sweet on you.
The feeling's not mutual.
You got somebody else?
No. Yes. I mean, no.
You got flour on your nose. Look
at these baking powder. Olympia Morelli, the newborn strapped to her back like an Indian papoose, was up and around and directing the meal preparation. Rachel Cohen shot Jason a questioning glance when the introductions were made.
Saul's at the mercantile.
So far else should he be?
Them wouldn't happen to be dried apple pies baking in them covered skillets, would it?
Yes, they would, Mr. Keogh. I shall be sure to save you a large piece.
I can't wait.
What happened, Wash? Why are you so broke?
Thieves. Thieves and miscreants.
Later, Wash ate with Jason, Saul, and Salmon.
Oh, this is mighty good. I ain't been eating nothing but snake for the last 2 weeks. Hell, I murdered the last jackrabbit in Santa Fe months ago. And I was about to run out of snake.
Run out?
How could a man run out of snakes in this country?
Wash drew his gun and opened the chamber.
Only 2 slugs left, see?
Don't worry, I'll supply the ammo.
Fair enough. That's your woman I see coming there, Saul? The one with that good apple pie all plated up? Boy!
The wagon train stayed over in Santa Fe for the next day, too. Jason figured that folks needed some time to get their land legs again, and the women were especially glad for the chance to stock up for the remainder of the journey. The men took care of all sorts of little repairs that they'd let pile up, and then collected in the nearest cantinas for beer and gossip. The women weren't the only ones who liked to talk. Matt McDonald wisely kept his distance. Jason didn't see him, although he heard that the few surviving possessions that were Matt's or his father's were being carried by Nordstrom, and those of his sister were being carried by, well, him. Jenny at work again. But he overheard snatches of whispers when people thought he couldn't hear. They told him nothing new, just reinforced what he already knew, that Matthew McDonald was planning on killing him. There wasn't much he could do about it, save for walking up to Matt, bold-faced, and shooting him through the heart. All he could do was just wait and see what happened, try to keep an eye on the slippery son of a bitch in the meantime, and above all, stay alive. By the time the wagons were ready to pull out and head west once more, Wash Kehoe had regaled the entire camp with stories about Jedediah, running back to when he was a trapper and ranged the Rocky Mountains. Jason noticed that the entire camp also knew about Quanah Parker and the Sugar Cube dice game now, too. Actually, Jason was growing a little embarrassed about it. He caught sight of Matt about a half hour after they pulled out. Matt was on horseback, riding alongside the Milcher's wagon and deep in conversation with the Reverend Milcher. Jason preferred to think that the Reverend was counseling Matt on the loss of his father, but he couldn't help but wonder if Milcher was in on the plan to do him harm. But that was just stupid, wasn't it? There wouldn't be a plan, not an organized one, if he knew Matt, and even if there was, Milcher wouldn't be in on it. He was too much the pacifist. He could barely kill an animal for the supper table. Still, just the fact that Matt and Milcher were talking made Jason a little bit mad. And the fact that Megan was still there, constantly in his thoughts, frustrated him no end. He had made a point of steering clear of her, but now they were moving again. Now they'd swing southwest, traveling down through Chiricahua Apache territory and then up to Tucson. Then it would be north a few more days until they came to the north end of the Santa Rita Range, then west over to California. It all sounded so simple when you just thought about the route or saw it on paper. Deceptively simple. There were the White Mountain Apaches to get by, then the Chiricahuas down around Apache Pass. Apaches left and right, as thick as proverbial thieves. The Maricopa and Hopi Indians he wasn't too worried about, nor the Pimas, seeing as how they were fairly peaceable by nature. But the Yaqui tribe, over by the California border country, he was very much concerned about. And Wash was no help. Oh, he was full of stories about white men being burned or flayed or skinned alive by Apache, men having their privates hacked off, women too, babies impaled on spears and torture beyond any measure of reason. Jason had to warn him not to tell those tales around the other parties in the train, particularly the women.
Oh, go darn it anyhow, Jason. Why you gotta take the fun out of everything?
Wash grinned when he said it, though. Conversely, Wash had himself been filled in on every action, idea, overstepped boundary, and implied insult suffered by each and every member of the train since they'd left Kansas City. Now, he liked Jason and had admired his father a good deal, and he had a hard time believing that Jason had sent Matt's daddy up that hill just to fall off it, or that if Jason had taken the southern route over the little patch of Indian territory, they wouldn't have run into Quanah Parker and his murdering thugs, or any number of other things that Matt McDonald told him. The Reverend Milcher seemed to be a troublemaker, too, bad-mouthing Jason every chance he had, that one, then invoking the name of the Lord. Like that would make everything all right. And talking bad about those folks of the Hebrew persuasion. His woman was a bit of a snob, too. She seemed offended by Wash's manner of dress. Also, his talk and his hair and, well, everything about him. He scratched at his neck. Well, there was no pleasing some women. Maybe she thought he was Hebrew, too. Hell, all he knew about Hebrews was that the Bible talked about him a lot and that Jesus was one. You'd think that would be a good thing to a Bible thumper like Milcher. They were about 4 days out of Santa Fe, and Jason had put him up front as the scout. That was fine by him. He was up here all alone with no women to pick at him or scold him for not taking baths. Nothing but the very faint rumble of wagons behind him. Nothing but the warm air and skittering critters and soaring birds before him. It was good to get away from civilization again. To escape the hodgepodge that was Santa Fe, with its fancy Spanish self-proclaimed aristocrats and its riffraff and everything in between. He had liked it at first, but the town had grown old on him. He thought of himself as a man of the wild places and a man of action, not some loiterer on the fringes of civilization. He had got to feel more and more like a camp dog. So, now here he was, on the ramble once again, and with cash in his pockets thanks to Jason Fury. He felt like a new man. He'd been jogging along, thinking for about 4 hours, when he saw the dust up ahead. It was a good ways off, but it was in a line, the kind that a bunch of galloping riders might make. He stared at it a couple of seconds longer, then wheeled his horse and went back to the wagons. Better safe than sorry. Jason gave the command to circle the wagons in tight. He figured that what Wash had seen might be Apache, but then again, it might have been a herd of wild horses or cattle or a line of troopers. But one out of four chances was reason enough to be prepared, no matter how inconvenient for certain members of the wagon train. Milcher, for one. He had broken a buckle on his harness and complained about having to untie the ends.
You should have taken care of that back in Santa Fe.
I couldn't. It was Sunday.
This time, the circle was formed in no time, complete with the livestock in the middle, and the men also pulled the wagon snugly head to butt once the teams were unhitched. Men armed themselves, women took their positions, and children and pets were tucked away in safe hiding places. And they waited. After what seemed a long while to Jason, the line of rising dust came into sight. It moved north of them, paralleled them for a bit, then turned north and disappeared.
Is that all? Are they gone? Are we free to move again?
What do you think, Walsh? They going past, or is it a trick?
I think I'd wait a mile if I was you, Jason. They's tricky.
Who's tricky? Comanche again?
More like Apache. Of course, in this country, could be either kind of redskin.
Either kind?
Looks like we're going to wait here a little longer, Selma. You know, to make certain they haven't circled around.
You know best.
Wish I did. I wish to hell that I did.
Two hours later, there was still no sign of marauding heathen, and Jason decided to move on out again. They might wring another mile or two out of the day if they hurried. Each man or woman hitched his or her team once more, and off they set. This time, Jason rode up front with Nash. Not because he wanted to keep an eye on the horizon, Wash was capable of that, but because he wanted to put as much distance as possible between himself and the still-complaining Milcher, as if it was his fault that the Reverend hadn't replaced that lousy buckle. He supposed he'd have to hear about it until they reached Tucson, which, he fervently hoped, would not be on a Sunday. It began to grow dark, and Jason reined his mount in.
Enough, Jason?
Reckon.
They turned their horses around and began to walk back toward the wagons.
Wash, you figure those really were Indians in that dust cloud?
Hard telling.
Well, next time you see something suspicious, you just do exactly what you did today.
Even if it puts your Reverend Milcher out of might?
Even if it puts him out a whole bunch. Especially, in fact.
That's the Jason Fury I recollect.
Jason didn't remember having been so, well, petty before, but he didn't say anything. He just let it pass and tried to think kind thoughts about the Milchers. Maybe he was being too hard on them. Well, hard on the Reverend anyway. In fact, when the new camp circle was formed and everybody was busy uncoupling their draft animals, Jason made a point to go over to Milcher and let him know that Saul Cohen had the hardware and skill to fix his broken harness. As he had imagined, Milcher turned him down. The blamed idiot. They traveled down through Apache Pass into the land that would one day be officially called Arizona, but was still a part of New Mexico. The landscape grew more and more rugged, and the Reverend Milcher was overheard to say that the crags and spires of Apache Pass were surely the work of the devil. A few miles after they traveled out of it, they came across signs of a massacre. They discovered the burned-to-charcoal remains of a wagon and three charred bodies, which apparently had been tied to the wheels. Apache arrows were stuck in the low scrub that ringed it. They found a chunk of unburned board with a bit of sign on it, in Spanish.
Glad Chavez isn't with us anymore.
Who?
They joined us on the other side of the Sangre de Cristos with Gooding's group. They got off the trail in Santa Fe.
Oh, the same Chavez what does the stained glass and ironwork?
That's the one.
Oh, they both went back east to pick up stuff for glass making. Him and his brother, I mean.
They did.
Comanche's got the brother.
Damn shame. You know, I got half a mind to take off and go buffalo hunting. Sooner or later, we'll starve the bastards out if we can't get them to play nice no other way. What you doing?
Better bury these bodies.
Jason pulled the folding shovel from his saddlebag. The corpses looked like they died hideous deaths. Their blackened, shriveled mouths were stretched open in twisted, silent screams. He didn't want Megan or Jenny to see them. Wash dismounted too and found his shovel.
Whew, better hurry then. Wagons be coming along pretty soon.
Aside from the mystery riders and the hapless Mexicans, they had no more trouble with the Apache, and for this, Jason was very glad. They rumbled through Goose Flats, which was little more than a collection of the tents and shacks of miners. They traveled north, the days growing hotter and the nights growing warmer, and came in sight of Tucson and its presidio a few days later. Jason had the wagons pulled directly into the presidio for safety's sake, and there they set up temporary camp. Jason remembered Tucson as a place where the mosquitoes were thick and the swampland even thicker. But it seemed the town had used up most of the old swamp water for irrigation. He didn't even see a mosquito. By this time, he figured that Matt McDonald had given up on killing him since he was still breathing. In fact, he'd only caught a couple of glimpses of Matt since Santa Fe. A coward was always a coward, he'd decided. Megan, on the other hand, was ever present. He'd taken to walking with her in the evenings, those evenings when it was safe, anyhow. He'd also explained that he couldn't stay, that he wanted to go back east, to college, to live back east, and never see the West again. She said she understood, but somehow he had a hard time believing her. He was having an increasingly hard time believing himself. His pilgrims took full advantage of Tucson, even if they didn't speak any Spanish. Personally, he found it difficult to get around without speaking Spanish, but Wash spoke it fluently and did the linguistic navigating for him and Saul and Salmon. Their first stop was Cantina de los Lobos, where Salmon had far too much tequila and Wash practically took a bath in beer, or cerveza, as the locals called it. They all partook of the cuisine, which turned out to be enchiladas, enchiladas, and more enchiladas. By the time they left, Saul and Jason were carrying Salmon between them while Wash staggered along behind, weaving his way down the street. Wearily, they finally stumbled back into camp.
Jason Fury, have you been drinking?
Walsh and Salmon drank it all up before I had a chance.
Well, Megan's been looking for you.
Figures. Where is she, Jenny?
Over at our wagon.
What's wrong?
Nothing. Go see Megan, all right? Saul, you should know better than to let Salmon get like this. He's going to feel awful in the morning.
Better he should feel awful in the morning than I should have a broken jaw tonight.
Megan?
Teary-eyed, Megan emerged from the tail end of the Conestoga and climbed down. She was still dressed, though she had pulled a quilt about her, like a cape.
What is it? What's wrong?
It's bad. I'm so sorry to bother you with this. I mean, seeing as how the two of you are like water and oil.
What about him? I haven't even seen him, except for a snatch here and there, for days.
He's in jail, in town, and nobody will go and get him out.
It's all right, Meg. Don't cry. I'll get him out.
It's serious. He killed someone.
They're wrong, Megan. I don't believe it. Where is he?
Jason took Saul and Wash with him. Wash was sobering up faster than anybody could have expected, and Jason thought they might need him to breach the language barrier. When they reached the jail, however, the sheriff turned out to be an Irishman named Clancy, or so said the little sign on his desk. And he sure enough had Matthew locked up in a cell. Matt didn't look any too happy about it either. And neither did he act overjoyed to see Jason, Saul, and Wash come in the front door.
Can I be of assistance, dear gents?
As a matter of fact, you can. I'm Jason Fury, sir. Wagon master of the train parked over in the Presidio.
Sheriff Clancy, I heard about you folks. Believe I've got one of your company under custody, as a matter of fact. You come to see me about him?
What's he charged with?
Well, seems he picked himself a fight up at the Purple Garter. Picked it with the wrong fella, too. You know your boy here ain't too smart. I'd be keeping him under lock and key if I were you.
How much is his fine?
Oh, no fine. See, he decided to knock out Jose Vasquez, then take a knife to him. The son of Miguel Vasquez? Oh, hell. The Vasquez family's been the big muckety-mucks around here since who laid the rail.
The big what-whats?
Well, what's it going to take to get him out of here by morning?
Oh, sorry, boys. Can't help you. Got to go to trial. Unless...
Unless what?
Well, unless you can get him clean out of the territory. I don't care much for the Vasquez bunch myself. Old Miguel holds himself pretty damn high, if you ask me. But I think that's going to be tough, considering that your friend here called him a stinking Mex and tossed a near full spittoon over him before the fight even started.
Oh, crud.
With the still half-drunken Wash along for linguistic support, Jason and Saul set out for the Purple Garter in search of Miguel Vasquez, father of the murdered boy. Try though they might, however, he was nowhere to be found. After going to the Purple Garter and four other saloons, they bumped into one of his cronies, a man who swore that Miguel had ridden home after the incident, and that furthermore, his compadre Miguel had still been angrier than a sack full of wet bobcats. He'd wanted to lynch Matt right then and there. From the tone of the speaker, Jason decided he wouldn't want Miguel mad at him. But what could he do? Like it or not, Matt was his responsibility. Additionally, he was Megan's brother. He had no choice. He and Wash and Saul went back to the Presidio, where Wash passed out, Saul went to be with his family, and after making sure the water barrels were all refilled, Jason went to his wagon to face Megan and his sister. He had a feeling they weren't going to be any too keen on his plan. He wasn't either. He got them together and urged them inside the wagon, where he joined them.
Listen up, you two. I can't get him out before we leave. In fact, I don't think I can get him out at all. Legally, that is. He killed a man in a bar brawl. I'm going to break him out.
At 4 o'clock, he roused the camp. They were a little cranky about being awakened before the dawn, but he managed to get everybody moving. They started to hitch their teams and eat their breakfasts. He slipped into town, taking Ward Wanamaker with him. Ward had volunteered, saying that Jason was a fool if he thought anybody, man or woman, could see him once and forget him. And that was just the way it was. Ward went into the sheriff's office first and found a groggy deputy on duty.
Oh! Jason!
Together, they tied and gagged the luckless deputy, found the key to Matt's cell, and locked up the unconscious deputy in his place. Matt, who had said nothing during the entire procedure, finally spoke just as they were leaving.
Why? Because you paid my pa to take you to California. Now shut up.
Huh?
Quiet!
Listen, you son of a bitch, if you two are set on killing each other, I suggest you wait till we get clear of town.
They slipped out, the streets still being mostly devoid of people, except for the occasional dozing drunkard, and walked quietly toward the Presidio.